gospel will overcome. In a world full of sorrow, by evil overrun, where darkness is veiled, the light of the sun. We know that the gospel overcomes.
You're listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. This is your place for intelligent conversation on the relevant issues of our day. And now, here's the host of The Dean's List, Dr. Paul Dean.
All right, glad to be with you on this Friday. Now, hey, something is happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. But anyway, it's it's clear, Gary. We're going to a new time frame. We got today's show, we got tomorrow's show, we got Sunday's show. That's our old time slot.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're moving to a new time slot.
Daily.
Daily, that's right. Monday through Friday, midnight.
Set your alarm. Get up and
that's
listen.
That's right, that's right. You know, I've decided to put a positive spin on this. The brass came in and they said, look, you're on during the day, we can't take it anymore. We're bumping you to midnight. But I'm choosing to look at this. No. That is not what happened. who is the brass anyway? But anyway.
I don't know either.
That'd be you. I'm bumping you. No, I decided I just like to hear myself talk. And so I wanted to be on every day instead of just 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So at midnight, I'm going to be awake. I'm going to be listening. Everybody else is, you know, snoozing, getting ready for the day, you know, the next day. But I'm going to be listening to me.
There are people that are up. There are people that work.
Yeah, that's
people
true.
People out driving around.
That's true.
At that time.
That's true.
You never know who you're going to reach. Plus, you also have sermon audio.
Yep.
Where people can find all sorts of things. And
yep.
Am I right in saying that all of your programs, all these new daily programs, will also be available there?
They will be on Sermon Audio. They will be on SoundCloud. They'll be on a number of web outlets. And we're going to really try to, you know, get folk to, what do you call, log on, listen to them. You know, it's like a podcast thing. But, yeah, if you're up, if you're driving around at midnight, Christian Talk 660 a.m., 92.9 FM, and anyway, Monday through Friday. So excited about that. It was a little more part of really what I wanted, Gary, and you know this because we've talked about it, not to belabor this point. We got to get to our subject matter for today. But part of what I want to do is be more current, more consistent with what's happening in the world. You know, if Trump says something, how's that? You know, I want to be able to deal with it that day. Or if John Boehner says something about Ted Cruz. That was awful, wasn't it? But anyway, that's a different subject matter than what we're going to talk about today. What we're going to talk about, by the way, this is actually live right now, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, so folk can call in if they want to. 1-888-660-WLFJ. How's that for a steel trap of a mind, that memory. 888-660-9535. Anyhow, call in if you want to throw something. We used to do, years ago, we did a daily show in the middle of the day.
That's right.
And we had Q&A Friday.
Mm-hmm.
You can just call in, ask whatever you want, talk about whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody's listening, we can do that. I'm happy to do that. But at the same time, I'm going to be talking about, for a few minutes at least, reasons why our culture, now this is serious. I'm not trying to sound unserious about it. But reasons why our culture will collapse. It's going to happen. In fact, it's collapsing already. Reasons why our culture will finish the process of collapse. Let me put it that way. Unless God intervenes. It's not that we're without hope. But God's going to have to do something. The handwriting's already on the wall if he doesn't. And I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I'm just trying to say, okay, Christian, we need to be aware of the times in which we live. We need to be aware of what's happening around us and why. And is there anything we can do about it? There is something we can do about it. And if Christians will do something about it, they'll do the right thing in the right way, then guess what? That's God's intervention. You know, there's a great mystery, Gary, between God's sovereignty, God's power, God's decree, God doing what God alone can do. There's a great mystery between that and human responsibility, us doing what we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they work together, God's sovereignty, man's responsibility. They work together in concert. They're not at odds with one another, not opposed to one another. We don't understand it all, but it's an amazing thing if a human being will stand up and do what God says. It's an amazing thing how God works. Anyway.
And if the man doesn't stand up, sometimes God finds another man.
That's exactly right, brother.
But God's going to do it.
That's right. That's right. Oh, me. So, you know, God says pray. God says speak. God says advance the gospel. And when we pray, when we speak, when we seek to advance the gospel, it's amazing how God does things. But obviously, I do believe God is the one that has to do something, but God's people need to be doing something as well. We need to be praying. We need to be speaking. We need to be doing those things. But, you know, if God does intervene, if we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing well, then the collapse is upon us. Now, one of the reasons that our culture will collapse—I mean, this is a no-brainer, Gary. It's a no-brainer, and it's also inevitable. But one of those reasons is that there is no comprehensive worldview currently. There's no comprehensive worldview that holds our culture together. And what do I mean by that? Well, I mean everybody has a worldview, whether they realize it or not, and everybody makes decisions out of that worldview. And 99.9% of people, they have actually contradictory worldviews, or their worldviews are inconsistent. A lot of times they're incoherent. But nevertheless, they have a worldview and or worldviews, plural, I guess you could say it that way.
Do we know what those worldviews are? Or do they have some long name that I don't know what it is?
Well, you're talking about the different worldviews in our culture.
Yeah, I mean people that are listening right now. Maybe they don't know they have a worldview.
Well, sure. You might have an animistic worldview. I mean, there's a fancy word for you. In other words, you might
believe in animals?
No.
Animistic. I'm sorry.
No, animism. You might see everything as largely spiritual. You know, Eastern religion, in a sense, is rooted in animism. You know, the mystery religions. You know, the notion that everything is spiritual. That's what's ultimate. And, you know, karma, and I can't change my situation. I'm subject to the fates. I'm subject to the gods that, you know, sort of tyrannize me. And, you know, I just hope I don't get conked on the head by a Volkswagen or something. I'm not making fun. I guess I am. But that I'm not trying to make fun. But that's animism, you know. And then, of course, there are thousands of religions, thousands of worldviews, quote-unquote, but there's a very real sense in which all of them can be categorized in one of three broad worldview categorizations. You know, the first is animism. Opposite of that would be atheism. You know, whether you're talking about the evolutionist, you know, the naturalist, the one that says there is no God, or the one that lives as if there is no God, or materialism, you know, that most everything is physical and the answers that we're looking for are found in the scientific method, ultimately. So animism on the one hand, everything is spiritual. Atheism on the other, everything's material, right? And then, of course, there is Christian theism. So what I'm saying is every worldview can be put under one of those broad categories. In Christian theism, we recognize that, yes, there's a material world, but there's also a spiritual world. But obviously, it's not just that. It's not dualism, per se, which would go under the animistic category, as it were, sort of an Eastern concept, yin-yang, that kind of dynamic. But while there's material, while there's spiritual, God is ultimate reality, God himself. I am, right? You know, say to Pharaoh, I am sent you. I am all that there is. This is the God of being. And everything that exists comes from him. And in him, all things consist. And so, anyway, that's sort of, I'm not trying to go down this philosophical trail, but those are your broad categories. And so here we are in a culture. And what are the things driving our culture? Well, one of the things that we're talking about is this new definition of tolerance. You know, tolerance used to mean, well, we tolerate, in a civil society, we tolerate one another. In other words, I might not disagree with you, but I'm not going to shoot you because I disagree with you. I might disagree with you, but I'm not going to ban your speech. I'm not going to ban your thoughts. Now, if you go out and shoot someone, that's different. We're going to, you know, keep you from doing that if we can. Going to put you in jail, you know, if we can't or whatever. But the point is, you know, we do need to tolerate one another. That's what freedom of religion is all about. That's what freedom of speech is all about. You know, public discourse, public debate, those kinds of freedom of the press, those kinds of things. But the new definition of tolerance is, now, wait a minute, you've got to affirm everyone else's worldview. You've got to say that their worldview is equally valid to your worldview. And if you don't say that, then you're going to be ostracized. You're going to be anathematized. And now, of course, this is translating into a false notion of rights that don't exist. For example, the right of a man to enter a woman's restroom or locker room. There is no such right. But in the new definition of tolerance, now we have a new right that's not really a right. That's actually a violation of the woman's right. It's actually discrimination against the woman. You're not discriminating against a man when you say you can't go into the woman's locker room any more than you're discriminating against a man when you say you can't shoot someone. This is what makes society civil. But this is part of why our culture is going to collapse unless there's an intervention of God. Mainly because there's no comprehensive worldview that holds it together. You know, in our founding days and for a number of years, it's not that everybody was a Christian. And it's not that everybody agreed on every little thing. But most everybody had a general understanding of the world, of the universe, that was essentially the same. In other words, there was a God, whether he was the Christian God of the Bible or whether you were a deist. And again, that's a problem, and the seeds even there are planted for destruction. But nevertheless, you had this notion there is a God, and because there's a God, well, there's a sense of right, there's a sense of wrong. There are rights that people have. These rights are inalienable because they come from God. And look, these rights and these truths that we're talking about, and I'm speaking of the founders, are self-evident. That's a philosophical term. In other words, it means it's obvious to anyone with eyes to see. It's obvious that we all have a right to life. Why? Because we're created in the image of God. We're human beings. It's obvious that we all have a right to liberty. Why? Because I don't have the right to enslave anyone. It's obvious that I have a right to pursue happiness. Why? Because nobody can hinder me from doing what I want to do as long as I don't hurt anyone else. These things are self-evident. They're obvious. But we no longer have that kind of comprehensive worldview. And because you don't have a comprehensive worldview, you've got competing worldviews. And when you have competing worldviews, you have nothing but destruction to look forward to. Because competing worldviews are going to naturally tear one another apart, which is going to tear society apart, which spells the end and the doom of society, unless we regain a comprehensive worldview, which is rooted in God and His reality and His plan and purpose for a civil society. Does that make sense? I'm asking the audience. So, take a look around. We're on the eve of destruction. But there's something we can do about it. We will talk more about it after the break. On the eve of destruction.
To look at the eyes of the people that you're serving that have nothing to offer you when they say thank you, and the child learns that person's got nothing and I'm part of something bigger than me, then they in turn begin to feel grateful.
That's Dr. John Townsend. Join Trace Embry and me, Rich Rossell, as we talk with John about the cure for entitlement. Next time on Licensed to Parent.
Licensed to Parent every Monday at 11 on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9.
Do teachers have the right to teach religion as fiction? This is Law and Justice with Jay Sekulow.
My daughter is in social studies in her class, and her teacher decided to tell the class that some stories about Jesus are untrue, and I didn't know if he had the right to make that kind of a statement in her class.
a no. The idea that a teacher would say this particular belief is not true violates the Establishment Clause. You know, we often hear the ACLU and Americans United for Separation of Church and State say that a particular practice or activity violates the Establishment Clause, church-state separation. But part of that Establishment Clause says that the government is not supposed to be hostile to religion, which is precisely what's taking place in a situation where you have a school district come in and say, you know, some of these Bible stories you're learning about, we don't think they're true. That's disparaging. It's hostility towards religion. The government's supposed to be neutral, and that is not neutrality.
Find out more at ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
Join us on Thursday, May 5th at 12 noon for our National Day of Prayer service at Springwell Church in Taylor, South Carolina. We're joining together as a community to worship and to pray for our church, our community, and our country. This is a laid-back acoustic worship experience planned to encourage you during your lunch hour on Thursday, May 5th at 12 noon. Visit springwell.org for more information or call 864-268-2299.
Thanks for telling your friends about Christian Talk 660.
Place, the pounding of the drums, the pride and disgrace. You can bury your dead, but don't leave a trace. Hate your next door neighbor, but don't forget to say grace and tell me.
Well, we need to believe it. We need to see it, and we need to do something about it. It's not just, you know, the state that we're in. We want to know why we're in it, of course, because if we know why we're in it and we know what the issues are, well, then that enables us a little bit better to bring about some real change. And what we're talking about is the fact that our culture, unfortunately, is in a very real sense on the eve of destruction. It's in the midst of collapse. We see it happening all around us. And so what are we going to do about it? We don't have a comprehensive worldview that holds our culture together. You know, with that comes the erosion of moral values. With that comes the erosion of truth. Not only religious truth or philosophical truth, but even objective truth. I mean, the whole transgender thing. I mean, we talk about this quite often. I don't want to talk about it too much, but obviously it's just easy. It's front and center. It's in the news, and it's obvious. You know, when someone says, yes, I was born biologically a man, but I'm not really a man, I'm a woman, well, we are denying objective truth. So the erosion of truth. And what we have in our culture, of course, is the embracing of relativism. Now, this is nothing new to you folk in terms of understanding where we are. But think about relativism. Think about its destructive nature. That's, you know, if my truth is true for me, and it may or may not be true for you, and what's true for you may or may not be true for me, you know, push that to postmodernism. Everybody's got a truth, and even though they might be contradictory, it's all true, or maybe there is no truth, and that's really the result. Think about multiculturalism. You know, it's interesting, young people think, well, I thought multiculturalism was a good thing. Well, if you're talking about the fact that people are different, and people come from different, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds, you know, men and women are different, you know, different ethnic backgrounds, and we all want to live together in harmony, that's fine. But that's not what the philosophy of multiculturalism is. The philosophy of multiculturalism says that my truth is true for me, but not only that, you have to affirm it as true, and not only that, that brings certain implications in civil society. So everybody's got an identity group, right? Instead of looking at people as human beings, we're all part of a group. And so if you're going to say, you know, homosexuality, for example, is wrong, well, you hate all homosexuals, and because you hate homosexuals, well, you're anathematized, or you're going to be banned from society, or banned from getting a job, or whatever the case may be. You're intolerant, you're a bigot, you're hateful. And, of course, that's not the case at all. If I think homosexuality is sin, I think heterosexual, extramarital heterosexual activity is sin. It's just these are the issues in our culture. So what are we talking about when identity politics? Well, all of a sudden, You know, if you use a certain word that has become one of those anathema words, you know, you're gonna be labeled. You know, you're a bigot, you're a racist, you're mean, you're hateful, you're a bully. We need some safe space. You know, we need to go to college for free because you're mean, you know, that kind of thing. And the problem is, when relativism reigns supreme, when you don't have a comprehensive worldview that holds society together, again, the competing worldviews compete, and the ones that have the most money or the ones that have the loudest voice, they win. And it's not about maintaining cohesion in civil society. It's not about maintaining liberty and justice for all, but it's about this particular constituency group getting what that particular constituency group wants at the expense of anyone else or everyone else. And that's where all the public pressure is coming from now. That's where all whether it's a political candidate, we parse every word. Did he use this word? Did he use that word? Did she say this or did she say that? And because we parse every word, it's not just the political candidates. It's just everyday people. And we parse those words. You've got the pressure groups. And now all of a sudden, people, you know, there is no more free speech. If there's no free speech, you know, no freedom of religion. If there's no freedom of religion, no free speech, etc. And no freedom of religion, no free speech, there's no freedom in general. And so part of what's happening in this particular culture, as a result of these things, not in any particular order, but one of the results is the rise of non-discrimination as the greatest good. Now, do I believe in discrimination? Well no. Evil discrimination? We don't want to harm others. See, as Christians, we're not to be racist. We're not to be bigots. We're not to discriminate. But on the other hand, let's think for a minute about the transgender issue. Not to keep going back to that one, but the transgender men, for example, want to say, well, you're discriminating against me if I can't go into the woman's locker room or the woman's restroom. Well, wait a minute. If non-discrimination is now the ultimate good, now we're destroying rights, genuine rights, real rights, rights to privacy, right to safety, those kinds of things. What? Let's talk about the Christian baker or the Christian photographer who says, no, I don't want to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding. I don't want to take pictures for a same-sex wedding. And so what happens? Well, discrimination. You're discriminating against the homosexual couple. Well, maybe so. But is it evil discrimination? Maybe so. But if non-discrimination is what's ultimate in culture, now what you're going to do to eliminate that discrimination is say, well, the baker must bake the cake for the wedding, or the photographer must take the pictures. Well, now you're discriminating against the baker or the photographer. You know that. But what you're doing is you're contradicting yourself when you make non-discrimination, because what happens is you decide who we're going to discriminate against and who we're not. And what you've done, though, which is more important than that, you're not only being arbitrary, but you're violating unalienable rights. What right do you or I or anyone else, what right does the government have to force the baker to bake a cake for someone he doesn't want to bake a cake for? What right do you or anyone else have to tell the photographer they have to take the picture for somebody they don't want to take a picture for? See, liberty, in a civil society, liberty has to be ultimate, not anti-discrimination. Because if anti-discrimination is ultimate, then all of a sudden you're going to trample on all kinds of rights. You're going to trample on all kinds of people. But if liberty is ultimate, then everybody has liberty, and nobody is really trampled upon. For example, one baker doesn't want to bake the cake. Couple says, okay, well, I don't like you. You're a bigot. Fine, whatever. That's your right, though. I'm not going to force you. Guess what? I'm going to go down. I'm going to get my cake somewhere else. See, that's liberty. There's no harm. No harm, no foul. It's liberty that enables us all to live together. We're not all living together when you force people to do something against their will. See, you and look, what are they doing? They're finding hundreds of thousands of dollars. The baker's got to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars in damages because the couple's feelings were hurt. Now, does that mean I don't care about feelings? No, it's not what it means. But we're talking about a civil society, and feelings do not rule the day. When they do, your society is collapsing. You see what I'm saying? Your society is collapsing. And so what we have is we don't have an understanding of what civil society really is. Civil society is just that. It's civil. We all have to get along. We can't allow people to steal from people. We can't allow murder. We can't allow extortion, those kinds of things. And we certainly can't allow forcing people to do something against their will. And see, those kinds of laws protect everyone. And that's what liberty is all about, and that's what a civil society is all about, and that gets us into the role of government. What is the role of government? Is the role of government to try to make, you know, everybody be nice to everybody? No. Is the role of government to set a social agenda and these are the values that we want to impose on people? No. The role of government is, you could put it this way, to protect us from one another, to protect us from predators, to protect us from people who would do us harm. But really, if you think about it, the role of government is to protect our rights. That's it. But when we use government to force people to do things against their will, when one constituency group, because they're louder, when they get their way and you violate the rights of someone else, you have a society that is literally being destroyed. So it's not about, well, I believe transgenderism is wrong and this person doesn't and we just disagree. It's not what it's about. It is about destroying this culture. It's about destroying civil society. It's about devolving into chaos. No understanding of what civil society really is, no understanding of liberty, no understanding of the role of government. And this is where Christians have to wise up. We have to understand these things, and I don't think we do in large measure. We have to understand the nature of man. He's sinful. And we have to understand what civil society really is and what's ultimate liberty and why. Because you don't have a civil society if you don't have that. What's ultimately ultimate is Jesus. We get that, but we're not talking about forcing people into the Jesus mold. We persuade with the gospel. And that brings me to this statement that if we want to see real change, if we want to see God intervene, we don't want to see the culture collapse from under us. If we don't want to see the Visigoths coming over the hill, metaphorically speaking, to our own destruction, we've got to realize that solving our problems politically, not that we shouldn't be involved, we should, but political solutions are impotent. We have to engage in the realm of ideas. The church has to be the church. We have to understand the gospel and what's ultimate, change of heart. That results in a change of mind and morals and ethics and understanding of how we're all going to live together. And that's why it's the gospel that overcomes. So embrace that. And we'll talk about it again on Monday. Monday.
You've been listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. To access archive broadcasts, go to trueworldview.net, where you'll find other helpful resources as well. The Dean's List.
The gospel.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.